do you always have it in your mind? Like, oh, one day I will own a restaurant.
I'll be honest, mate, I think I'm just obsessed with pizza.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Breaking Bread. I'm your host, Liam. Sitting opposite me is my mate, Carl.
All right, Carl.
I'd like to start by thanking everyone that's here for listening. Really appreciate it. It's the whole reason we do the podcast. Let's spread the Birmingham positive message. If Brummies can't love the city, how can we expect anyone else to love this city? We've got to get this message as far as possible. And you can do that by doing us one thing. If you could just tell one friend, family member, anyone who you think who loves food, lives in Birmingham, thinks they might enjoy this podcast, go tell them or just tweet about it, share it on Instagram, do one of those things. It doesn't cost you a penny, but it really helps us out.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Sorry, I'm distracted. There's a squirrel in the garden and it's proper eyeballing me. Like, it's just stood on top of the bird feeder, just staring at me.
Like, your move. What are you gonna do?
He's like, come on, I dare you, let the dog out. Let's see what happens.
So you're keeping all good, man. Now we've got the formalities out the way.
Yeah, it's all good, isn't it? It's great.
Yeah, and it genuinely is. Sometimes we sit here and it's like everyone, we suffer up stands.
Yeah, sometimes I sit here and lie my ass off and say everything's brilliant.
Yeah.
But no, it's all good.
We're a bit tired. Two nights out on the row.
Oh, two and a half nights out, pretty much. That Friday night.
What a night.
If you go on our Instagram, you'll see it quite often. Well, I don't know when this comes out. It was probably a week. So if you go back a week and look at some of the pictures, we're out of a good few of them. We made some really good friends while doing the podcast with some, I don't like the word influencers, but people that are involved in the Birmingham food scene and promoting people.
I feel like we just created a connection between this group of people by just, everyone's genuinely really nice people.
Sort of just fell together, didn't it? Yeah. It was one night out that the relationship organised. And we were like, this night out is absolutely phenomenal. We should keep doing this.
It's Saturday of the night. I don't know if you were there Friday, but everyone's like, that was one of my favourite things this year. And everyone said that. Of all the stuff we've done as the podcast, all the stuff that all these amazingly talented bloggers and people had done, that was the highlight. That was a good reason to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, that was a fun night. And then, yeah, Friday was basically our Christmas party, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Just all the people we love and went to places we love. Like, went to Attic, met there, and obviously Attic's fantastic. That place is always busy as well.
I was surprised. First time I've been and it was packed. Yeah, massive place.
Yeah, like, that surprised me. You hadn't been on a night out there.
No, just daytimes if I'm going.
Yeah, it's always the same. You can't get a seat. And there's a massive room and then a massive tent and everything was full.
Cracking alcohol-free beer as well.
Yeah, they're really,
really good.
It's good to see them pushing that now.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And then we obviously went on to Deadbeat.
Oh, God, I love Deadbeat.
I love Deadbeat. That's our place, isn't it? It was such a nice, happy place. Music was fantastic.
Beers were brilliant. Oh, and we got some subs as well. Big up the chicken subs there. You know, I've been waiting for someone to do chicken subs, decent ones, for a lifetime now.
I'm never going to be able to eat a chicken burger again. Like, this is just...
I think it was better than the burgers.
Way better than burgers. Way better.
Although I did like the Christmas burger at Bonehead when we had that. That was good. That was really good. But yeah, the chicken subs, different flavours. Just like really, really fucking good.
Mm.
And the crinkle cut chips, man.
I love the crinkle cut chips. It's just like... It's what you expect when someone who owns Bonehead opens a bar. What do you expect? It's going to be fantastic.
And like... Everyone there was cool as fuck. Like, you just bump, you just rank. It's one of them places where you can pretty much go and sit on any table.
Yeah, you ain't going to get arseholes in a place like that, are you?
People will just chat to you and you'll have a nice night. Like a welcoming, not just like you can go and sit on a table and they'll start talking to you. They'll be like, yeah, no, come chill with us, man. Like, it's such a nice vibe. I was very hungover there the next day.
Yes, that was a struggle for everyone, man. I had stuff to do as well. Like, I still managed the gym, but it was not easy.
No, but.
And then last night we had our annual. We'd like to go for a nice meal with our wives on the like one of the last Saturdays before Christmas. We call it our little joke of a party, like breaking bread.
Yeah, like we'll go for a nice meal somewhere.
Laggies.
Went to Laggies. Yeah. That Laggies was the choice this year. Aside from how much of a pain in the ass it is to get into Birmingham if you're driving now, getting there, like once you're there, it's fantastic. Yeah. I love Laggies anyway. Laggies, I love everything about the place.
How'd you not, if you've ever met Luca, like, how'd you not love that guy? It's phenomenal.
And the food. You know what? Every time I've eaten there, I've been so full. Like, can barely move type full. The portions are so generous.
What is it about pasta that no matter how full you are, you just have to keep eating?
You know,
that carbonara.
It's just that delicious.
Oh, it was so good. I love that carbonara.
Like, there's so much good food. I had pork belly.
Oh, that looked so good.
That was incredible. It was really, really good. I had a little carbonara as well, because they do the mini carbonaras.
The carbonara at Laggy's made me realise that I'd never really had carbonara before.
No.
I'd had it loads of places, but it was nothing like what it really should be.
And it's just the quality of that ham that he's using, pork.
Or everything about
so
it.
So good.
It's egg yolks, there's no cream.
Yeah, I think, you know, it should go without saying that there's no, I don't think that should be even put out there that there's no cream. Because if there is cream, you haven't got a carbonara.
Mate, I used to be happy with places that did a carbonara, who made like a roux cheese sauce. That's how I thought it used to be. And it was smoky bacon. And then you like go to Laggy's and it's like, then when you take like in films when they take the pill and it like their mind just
wakes up.
Oh.
It was incredible.
Yeah, I loved it, man. The start was great. I had squid.
Yeah, that was good. I had truffle arancini.
I was jealous. I think the whole table missed that. And you happened to see it and we were all like, oh, what did we
I knew
that?
Before I went that I was getting it. I'd seen it on Instagram like last week. I was like, oh, I'm having that when we're there.
Yeah, that looked absolutely fantastic. Another place that, do you know, somewhere I'm quite jealous I've never been, but you've been a couple of times recently and it's just made me more jealous, was Gaijin.
Yeah, I went there the other day. Went mad there and just ordered everything I wanted. It was absolutely fantastic. Oh, I've been singing about how good Gaijin is anyway, but it was so good. Like, really, really. It's that good. My brother lives in Leamington and he travels into Birmingham to go there. Place is super friendly. They're really nice in there. And the sushi is just, it's unrivaled, I think, in Birmingham.
We'll have to go this year, definitely. It's like, I'll just tag along with you two.
Yeah.
My wife
I'll go with you, it's fine. I just love sushi. I'm mad for Japanese food anyway, like all Japanese food. But that place in particular, just for sushi, it's phenomenal. And it feels very Japanese as well when you're in there. Like just sitting at the counter, getting it put in front of you when it's finished being made. Like,
I feel like it does its own thing, plods along, just knowingly being brilliant. And everything kind of does its thing. I love it.
There's a lot of confidence in what they do there, which I like to see. I like to see this, like, a confident chef working.
Do you know, a couple of things coming up that I just want to quickly shout out is obviously we're booked into a couple of things. The opening of Rabbit.
Yeah, Ash's new place in Sturchley coming up.
Like, bookings are live for that now. I think somebody went on the website to book the other day and there was like waiting lists for days, and I'm just not surprised by that because, like, it's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, I was quick off the mark for that. I was like, right, I'll book a table. I'm not here the weekend it opens, but I was like, right, we'll get one for the week after. I can't wait.
So definitely go follow that and have a
look
at that.
We've been to a few of her pop-ups this year, or their pop-ups this year. And the job they're both doing, front of house and in the kitchen, like, you just know that restaurant's going to be absolutely phenomenal.
It's definitely the opening I'm most excited about for next year. And it's happening soon.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. And Cray's changing it up at 6:70. I'm looking forward to that. That's more like you build your own tasting menu, really.
Yeah. And his collab that we've booked him for with Strip Club Street Food.
Yeah.
Tom Hope.
That's going to be great as well.
Yeah, I love that.
I love the fact that yeah, it's nice that people are banging stuff in the diary for January. Because January is depressing as shit, isn't it? Let's be honest. Like, you've had the excitement of Christmas.
There's a good few bits. Andy as well. Andy's at Le Petit Bois, one of our favourite places. A few weekends. That'd be good. He's doing his Sunday roast. And Dan Lee, one of our favourites, is at Toff's, man. Another one of our favourites.
Yeah,
Rob
Palmer. Pop up as well, man.
Yeah, some good things happening. Good to get excited for January.
It feels like January is a good time for people just to do this shit because people are skint as well, so they're not going out. So when they do go out, they want it to be for something that little bit different.
Yeah.
So if you're doing a collab with someone, you're like, well, it forces you to spend your money because you're like, well, when am I going to get this chance again? Mm. Let's face it, collabs are some of the best things that happen in the city. Like, I love them.
And when they're completely different, like 6:70 Strip Club Burgers, you just want to see what they're going to create. You know some magic's going to come. And Dan Lee, in fairness, and Rob Palmer. Completely different. Traditional, modern, European versus
Dan Lee's
style
unique. Of cooking, yeah. Oh, yes, that would be wicked.
Good. I love it when they clash. Like, I love it. Yes, as I started the podcast by saying, we really appreciate everyone who listens to this podcast. This is our last of this year, last of this season. We absolutely loved it again. Just can't say how surprised I am that we're still doing this after 5 years.
You know what? We're still doing it. Genuinely, this might sound arrogant, but we're really good at this.
We're good at it.
I feel like we're the best we've been at it for ages as well.
Yeah, we're getting better all the time. But we love doing it as well. Absolutely, like we couldn't be doing this after 5 years if we didn't absolutely love it.
Yeah, I love it more now than when we started doing it.
Yeah, me too, man. Me
too. It's great. We've got such confidence with the guests, and we get the guests are so good.
Yeah, it's all about the guests. It's not
about us. It's not about us at all. Like I say it like this, we're just good at getting the guests at ease and getting them talking. Yeah, now. That's the work we do for the podcast is more like in that half hour chat before we start recording.
Yeah. So thanks again. Happy Christmas, everyone. And we'll see you again. We'll be back in March. We've got some big plans next year.
Yeah, the podcast next year is going to be much bigger. And
Yeah.
It's going to be massive. If everything goes to plan anyway, we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to the next series.
Back in March. And obviously you got today's episode.
What an episode to end on as well.
This is a cracker, this. I mean, I know we say this every time.
So if you can hear my dog shaking, he's got the noisiest collar in the world.
The people love Jess.
Yeah.
What can you say?
Yeah, he's a popular, he's the third member of the podcast. But yeah, what a podcast to end on, Smoke and Ash.
Yeah, two great people, you know, Paul, Claire. I get the feeling like whatever they were going to do, they were going to be successful.
Yeah, whatever restaurant they decided to run with would have been good. Because they've put so much, you hear the amount of effort they put in before. These aren't just two people that thought, fuck it, I'll open a restaurant.
Yeah, you hear it all the time, you know, one day I'm going to open a restaurant. And then they just think that they're going to drop their job, just buy a unit, a building and just crack on. And that rarely ends well.
No, the amount of effort they put in beforehand, like they really put the work in before opening, which is what you want to see. Learn while you're doing it. Learn what you want to learn, then do it. Yeah. And then you hit the ground running. That's why it feels like it's been open so long.
Yeah.
Because as soon as it was opened, it was like established and good.
I'm seriously impressed. I love their offering. I love that it's like they have not neglected any side of the business. They look after their people. The pizza, obviously, is incredible. You've been there a few times.
I go regularly, yeah. I really love the pizza. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Like classic pizzas. They do a special all the time as well that's a bit different. Which, I could talk about their pizza for a very long time, to be honest.
And surely one of the strongest cocktail menus in a pizza restaurant ever.
For any restaurant in Birmingham, I'd say. Like, the drinks offering are brilliant.
They could buy the unit next door and just open that as a bar.
Yeah.
Just for waiting for your table or something. And they'd do really well. You'll get a lot from this episode. If you love pizza, you'll love it. If you love Birmingham, you'll love it. But if you're a restaurant owner or looking to open a restaurant, have a real good listen, because they have got some absolute gems about how they got started and what they're doing in this.
Yeah. Their model of how they've gone about it is probably the way anyone should really go about it.
That's the way you should do it. Yeah. I hope you absolutely love this episode. We love making it, as we love making all these episodes. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah. Happy Christmas.
Basically, carry on from where we've just been chatting. How are you both doing?
Well, apart from having a cold and probably sniffing through the interview.
Apologies, yes.
And being here till whatever time last night, I think we're pretty good.
It's that time of the year, isn't it? Do you break up for Christmas or are you going straight through? Or
2 days off, and then I think we're probably quite lucky this year because we've got the first week in January when the schools are still off, and we'll have a little bit of a break then.
Oh, that's nice. We've got a good week to have off.
Yeah. We've got to take some time off. I mean, I forget what we did last year. But we've got to have.
We had 2 days.
I've got to see some sun, boys. I've got to go and do something different.
Oh, at the moment it's 4 o'clock, pitch black yesterday. I'm sure I'll get that seasonal deficiency order, whatever it is. Like, I was just so depressed looking at the weather.
Yeah, it's important to have a break. You know, it's weird because we both do 9-to-5s as our proper job. So, I always moan every Christmas because everyone, come the 22nd, most independents in Birmingham, they just break up and they don't come back until I get back to work. And I'm like, I wanted to go and visit all these places. But then at the same time, I'm also a big advocate for obviously staff taking time off and having time for themselves and mental health.
It's really important. It's one of the reasons we don't open late. I mean, we have a license to serve alcohol till 11, but we don't want our team hanging around being home late because they've got families to go back to. Or God forbid, they might actually want to have a social life and go and do something.
Yeah. So what time do you shut?
Last orders around about 9:30.
Food orders, yeah. We do stay up until 11 on Friday and Saturday. But that's all. Yeah, there's no late night. You know, I don't want a 1 a.m. finish. It's just not It's not conducive to any kind of good behaviour, yeah. I don't think.
We've got students living upstairs. There's people, there's families that live around here. So we try and behave.
Yeah, you forget that around this road. Everything above everyone is people live there.
You've got offices over there. We have there's a college on the street, a private college, and we have international students that live upstairs. They're quite young, so they go to bed early.
They're not mindful of exams and all that for them.
They're going to bed early.
That's a shock to us as well. Yeah, they complain about the noise.
Sixth form students.
What? Yeah,
I thought you'd be complaining about the noise.
Yeah, absolutely nothing.
So we're going in a restaurant down here. Can you all shut up?
I'm not being funny, but how, like, richly students living around here?
honestly, they're international students. They are either sent over, but some of the cars that pull up to pick them up, I mean, you get Range Rovers and you get proper. I've spent another £500,000 doing it up Range Rovers.
Yeah, what's that company that does them?
Overfinch
Plus.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's sick, you know.
And it's strange enough, none of them have ever been in here.
That's because they're all terrified. They can only open the door for Deliveroo.
Well, they're missing out.
We try and tell them, but look, there's plenty of other people coming.
I mean, if I lived above there, I'd be every day.
I'd love it if you lived upstairs. I'd love that. We could do it.
Oh, like you'd soon get bored. Knocking on the window. Hello.
We could do it like a weekly podcast.
Last orders.
So I kind of alluded to, we're in a really nice part of Edgbaston. It's a stunning little street. Bit sad that there's no market today like there should be, but you chose a good spot.
We're pleased with it. It's a beautiful place. So Greenfield Crescent, they've been developing this for years.
It was pre-COVID that all the plans started. So Calthorpe have had quite a big vision for this area to create. There's never really been a village centre for Edgbaston, so that's what they're trying to create here, particularly on Greenfield Crescent. So there's a lot of refurbished, previously residential, some office spaces, but they're turning them all into retail space. I mean, yeah, you can see as soon as you drive up here, you just think, wow, what a beautiful place to be. So we were hooked pretty quickly, weren't we?
We have a lot of, obviously there's the university down the road, and we have a lot of parents turn up, you know, they brought their kids up from London. There's a lot of London kids at Birmingham University, and they walk up and down the road and they're like, oh, this is amazing. It's like Knightsbridge. I didn't think you had things like this in Birmingham.
Up north.
I'm like, what do you mean? Windows and bricks and water. No, it is beautiful. I mean, it's a long-term investment from everybody. I mean, we're hoping that there's going to be more retailers, more food and beverage come in. It certainly needs it. There was a lot of offices here. They're going. So there's lots of space. We've got some terrific neighbours. I mean, you've got the guys over the road. Chapter.
Chapter,
they're super. Good. They're
big place as well. It's big inside, isn't it?
It's huge.
It is.
You don't realise until you go in, the big space at the back. And then you've got the guys at Loki two doors down. Brilliant as well. You know, and you've got the physician, got the Highfield just round the back.
Yeah, I like the Highfield.
Yeah,
good company. Simpsons down
Blue
the road.
Piano.
Yeah. Got the Sir Tack, and you forget Simpsons. Yeah. Absolutely right.
Blue Piano for the carrot cake.
Yeah.
Star.
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
But I think it's difficult for retail in general at the moment, just getting the footfall here. So I think the bigger the collective we can make it, the more of a destination this area can become, and then everybody will benefit from it.
But yeah, good to know about the market today, because the market we had last month, which was the Christmas light switch on, we found out yesterday 8,000 people came.
Wow.
And that's not 8,000 people from Edgbaston, that's all around the Midlands.
Yeah.
I think we have 70, 80 stores, you know, selling cheese and bread and art and everything else. But people spend a lot of money, and then, you know, as soon as you open the doors, and we open early for coffee, people just flood in.
Mm.
It's crazy. I mean, we've got how many people booked in today?
130. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. In our little 35-seater restaurant. Yeah. So
that's an incredible number.
Scary. You know, we're sitting there thinking, well, how are we going to manage this? You know, we've got to make sure that people are in on time and people have ordered. And we've got to do our bit as well. We've got to make sure that the pizzas go out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. We need to have a really structured process to get through those kind of days, make sure that people don't get disappointed. You don't leave people standing at the door because we've got nowhere to sit them down because of our lack of space.
Mm.
So quite often we send them over to our neighbours to have a quick drink while we're waiting for the table to be free, which they love because they get extra business. But on days like this, you can end up with literally nowhere to go because everywhere's fully booked.
Yeah.
So it's really important that we keep on top of that task when they come in.
Do you know, like, a lot of the pizza places that seem to be appearing out are good ones. They're like, do you know the style where it's like pallets and like bare timber and...
Mm-hmm.
Hipster
joints.
Yeah, like that cool
brick
thing.
So who are you referring to? Who looks like that?
What I was going to say was, like, this is the complete opposite of that. This is like, it's classy place. Was that because you moved here? Like, was your plan always to open a pizza place that was more of like a real restaurant than like a
pizzeria,
shabby kind of pizzeria.
It has been, and actually, you're looking at our restaurant now. It looks better than ever because we've just had the floor redone. We've changed a lot of the lights because we've got lots of plans. We want to use the space a bit more productively next year. But you know, I'm 45. You know, my days of sitting on upturned milk cartons, they're gone. Yeah. I've done that. So the Phil who owns Loki, he called us posh pizza. And we kind of went,
oh, we've recoiled.
Don't call us that, Phil.
We hated it, but actually we've kind of become that, haven't we? So.
It is a proper restaurant. I mean, you know, our staff, they've got huge experience. You know, a couple of the guys have come from Simpsons. Mm. They understand what a service looks like.
Yeah. I was here three Sundays ago.
You came for the Remy Mary's, didn't you?
Yeah.
Always a winner.
Yeah, they were so good as well. I could have sat here all day.
Mm-hmm.
People do.
The Remy Mary's are incredible. Big shout out to them.
Does a great job, yeah.
They're so tasty.
That's the thing. It's the cocktail menu as well. It's a proper cocktail menu. People could come here just for the cocktail.
Well, people do. And I think if we had a bigger space, we'd have a lot more people that would use it.
Get people just drinking the cocktail, because your cocktails are fantastic.
That, our original concept, I mean, it has evolved over the time that we've been planning the restaurant and ending up in Edgbaston. And yes, it does have to be smarter here because of the surroundings. But we always wanted it to be an equally strong drinks offering to the food. My background's in booze, not just drinking it, but working there too.
I didn't even realise that was a job.
It's not the worst job you can have. But because of that, I've got a real passion for it. And I wanted the bar offering to be really strong, both cocktails and wine, everything that we've got. So it's been a kind of labour of love from my side. You can sometimes in a pizzeria get a drinks offering that's not quite up to the same standard as food. It's not to say everybody's like that. But travelling around the world and visiting different pizzerias, we have felt that. And felt there was a bit of a gap there that we could explore and try and offer something slightly better quality.
Feels like an afterthought a lot of the time. Uh-huh. You know? Focus on the pizza, get the pizza brilliant, but then, what about the cocktail?
It's like that all around the world, isn't it? You go in and you're knocked up, you know, the pizza's amazing. But, you know, 25 minutes in, it's like, right, off you go then. And it's like, well, is that it? You know, I want a reason to stay. And we have a wonderful wine list. I mean, it's appropriate for a pizzeria, you know.
Bearing in mind
the area we've got, there's a certain standard and we have to make sure we do that. So people will sit here for an hour and a half, if it's a big group, perhaps 2 hours, and people will buy that second, third bottle of wine. They'll have those cocktails. It's a proper event. You know, we don't just want people bang in and out. That's not the joint we are. So, yeah, that was always the plan, to make it just a little bit smarter. And as Claire said, it has evolved, and there are some things that have happened we didn't know was going to happen. But
like what was it you didn't know was going to happen?
People don't travel around Birmingham to come to us. You know, trying to get people to come out of Sturge Vegas to come here, you know, hey, look, good luck. We're predominantly Edgbaston and Harbour. Saying that, you know, when we first opened, we had people come from all around the Midlands. And we still do.
We still do. It's just not the majority. Also, I think we did want to be a neighbourhood restaurant, and that's kind of what we've become. And I'm really proud of that, to feel part of that community.
There's people that come in here twice a week, people that come in every week. And it's great. You know, there was a couple of weeks ago, we walked into the restaurant and every table was taken up by customers who we knew. That's
a nice feeling, yeah.
You don't need 1,000 people to turn up at the door. We're not a mega shed that needs throughput all the time. We just need repeat business, and we get that.
I love that. I'm really jealous of people who have like a local to go to all the time. Because of what we do, and we're always torn about supporting somewhere new, but then going back to our favourites, you know, like it's like...
And we've created on Sunday particularly, almost like, you say, a community. Perhaps that's taking it too far. But we do Kids Eat for £1. Mm. And that comes from when our son was born, when we lived in Bristol. We found places that suited us and it was easy, and we kept going back because we were looked after and it was the right kind of value. And we've created that here, so we have families in every Sunday. Some days it's bonkers. It's one of the reasons we had the floor done, because it was just coming up because the kids are going berserk. Got a great big box of toys, you can see it behind me, some of my son's toys.
And some of them from one of our very good neighbours, my baby stroller, just down the road. So it's great that we can try and help each other with business
as
well.
The kids, they walk in and they make a beeline. They know where the toys are. And the parents talk to us and they say, we gave the kids a choice. Where do you want to go for dinner today? Oh, that place with the toys. And it's great. And when the summer comes, if we have a summer ever, open the doors and they're all running around outside.
Mm.
And kids from different tables, they all start playing with each other. It's like the good old days, rather than sitting there on the phone watching Bluey or whatever they're watching. So that's really good. We've really been proud of what we've created on a Sunday.
Oh, my daughter loves it. Yeah, I brought her that Sunday and she loved it.
Yeah, and I mean, we obviously have a couple of collaborations. We have Carl Hawkins come in and do his gentleman cocktail thing on a Sunday, and it kind of works. Like the kids are occupied and the parents get a quality drink.
Yeah, well, you've got to go through that menu and pick all the different things you want in your drink. I don't know how many combinations there are, but it's got to be the thousands.
There's new ones now.
Hundreds of thousands of combinations.
Yeah, you bring something new every month. It's always worth coming to see what else is on the menu. We look forward to it immensely.
But there's nothing, when you're hungover, I'm not being funny, a Bloody Mary's absolutely
the business.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Especially with the little skewer that you get with all the nice little snacks on there as well. It's heavenly.
So that's something we're looking to continue over the next year. In fact, if we have the opportunity, we'd like to make something a bit more of it.
Mm.
Maybe do some food pairing and make it a bit more a part of the whole experience that you get when you come here. So part of what we always wanted to do was to bring the bar and the kitchen a bit closer together and have links between things, whether it's pairings or whether it's using some of our drinks products in the dishes. We've managed to do that with some of our Christmas pizza specials at the moment. We've got a pizza with a pork glaze on it, which is going down really well. And we had a lovely pizza with Highland Park whiskey base back for Birmingham Cocktail Weekend in the summer, which again was a huge success. So I think it's just trying to be creative like that and keep pushing the boundaries as to what we think we can do with pizza.
So an example was week before, we did an event with Loki. So in their space at the back, they had a whiskey tasting session and they matched pizza and whiskey.
Oh, man.
It's a thing.
Not the obvious combination, but
no,
people seem to really enjoy it.
Chocolate or whiskey.
Yeah.
And
no, it works. So we supplied the pizzas, we brought them over. Loki guys did the rest. And those collaborations, yeah, that's great. We enjoy doing that. That's the fun bit. That's the fun. And we think there's a lot more to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think over the next 18 months, where can we take pizza? I don't mean like we're going to start making Detroit-style pizza or Chicago pizza, which we did actually the other day.
Yeah,
it was not too bad. But we know what we're good at. And we're not going to try and do... be too wacky.
Oh, I think you've got the pizza. For me, you've got the pizza stuff nailed, like absolutely nailed it. Like,
it's just having fun pizza. With what else we can do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we keep hearing about this sort of emergence of British pizza, that it's not just traditional Italian flavours on there. And I think the more ingredients that people can explore, and whether it's locally sourced or locally foraged even, we've been exploring different Asian flavours on pizzas. It's a canvas. You can do what you want with it. Let's just see what we can put together and whether people like it.
We try and pick people's brains when they come in, because one thing we have noticed, we have a lot of chefs. We have a lot of the hospitality industry coming here, and we're always asking them questions like, how do you do this? How did you get to that stage? How did you get that Michelin star? And I'm not saying that pizza's going to get a Michelin star, but we have noticed there's some pizzerias, particularly one up in Manchester, Honest Crust. They've been mentioned in the Michelin Guide this year.
Wow.
The way that they operate, the way that they use fresh produce, local produce. And it's like, is there a star to something here? You speak to some of the pizzerias in London and they're now referring it to as London style pizza or UK pizza. We've taken predominantly Neapolitan style and we've turned it around and now we're sending it back to the world. There's some phenomenal pizzerias doing some phenomenal work.
Is there any backlash with that? You know, people can be precious about like how authentic something is, and I hate the word authentic.
But we try and stay true to a number of classics on the menu.
Yeah.
So we'll never, you know, it's amazing how many margaritas you still sell, despite the fact that you'd think people would want to explore, but people go to what they know and they love. So they know what they're going
to
get.
Everyone's got a little spin on it. I mean, we talked at the start, didn't we, about the pizza scene in Birmingham, which has evolved in the last 18 months. Still not many of us. There still needs to be more. You go to Alicia's, you go to the Amore, you go to Bait and Brick. Everyone's doing something slightly different. Mm. There's a crew in town as well. Is it the guys who do OPM? They're starting to do...
Corner Shop,
We want to go down. We want to support it. We want to see it. But because we're open on Wednesday and busy, we just don't get the chance.
Oh, it's worth going down.
I'm sure it is. It looks amazing.
Fantastic. So good. It's a very different offering. It feels weird that it's called pizza, because it feels like it's such a different thing.
Yeah.
But it is pizza, it's strange.
We looked at that when we went through the process of what can we do, what's our business going to be. But it was a couple of years ago, and we felt that it just probably was a bit too soon.
Birmingham wasn't ready for that.
No, I'm not entirely sure it's still ready for it now.
I don't think Birmingham adopts new trends that often.
I've been invited to, it makes me sound like I'm a superstar, but almost like a pizza conference organised by... guy who owns Pizza Pilgrims. Pizza Pilgrims is massive in London. And there's 120 of us, all independents, all going down. And it's a general kind of like state of play of the UK pizza industry.
Mm.
And it's interesting for me because I'm not in the kitchen all the time. I'm not the chef. I can cook, but we have people that are far superior to me that do it. So I've got to go down there and sit and talk to these guys who are all chefs and try and hold my own. But it's interesting, actually, there's a real community starting to develop now. And there's pizzerias opening everywhere all the time. People clearly believe that it's a business well worth running.
We started this podcast 5 years ago, and we used to always get asked, like, what do you think Birmingham's missing? And we either said Mexican or pizza, because there was Alicia's and there was Otto.
That was it.
Yeah, look, we didn't mention Otto. I mean, their pizzas, we haven't been there for a while, but their pizzas are great.
Yeah, we're big fans.
But that was it, in a city of 1 million people.
Yeah.
What is it? We say 1.2,
there was Pizza Express,
isn't it?
And that was about it, I think, when we moved back here.
We talked about the Mexican, is it La Mexicana? They were next to us at the Independent Birmingham Festival. Yeah. And at the end of the night, they had some food left over, and we went and had a chat, and we put it on a pizza. We put some of their beef on a pizza. Good. And we were there with our mates, Cofton Pizza, as you know, and we sat there and went, hang on a sec, this is a thing, we could do something here. So we want to pick up that conversation with those guys. And that whole collaboration thing in Birmingham is pretty strong at the moment.
Polly do it fairly often.
Yeah.
Again, we, as punters, because Polly is it Polly or Polly?
I don't know. I
wish someone would tell me.
I say Polly now. I used to say Polly. Well, I'd say Polly.
But we go there as punters. We take our little boy when we can. Pizza's different to ours. We think it's great.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's weird. It looks pretty similar, but yeah, it's massively different.
It's very different. Very different. Some of the collaborations they do, when they did one with Eat Vietnam and Ming, that was amazing. I was jealous. I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah,
they probably would do if you approached him. I'm sure
we've got a couple of conversations about collaborations next year, and we're not going to, you know, tell everyone about it, but it's something we're working on all the time.
We've had a great collaboration with some friends of ours, Soho Slice Pizza as well, from Hanswell.
Yeah, I've seen them.
So obviously they normally do events rather than having their own restaurant, but they've come and cooked with us a couple of times now. We've just done our third night with them, and it's always busy. They're the loveliest people in the world, and they've brought some really great ideas to us in terms of flavour combinations. It's been a really great experience. It's always vegetarian, and for us, that's been a really great area to explore as well.
I think I've said this to you guys before, when we were doing the research for our project, we listened to your podcasts, and particularly we listened to the one that you did with
Pisa.
And I listened to that again and again and again. And I came home and went, Claire, this sounds a lot tougher than what we think it's going to be. And when we first opened, the first people that contacted us were Jack and Dan. Just a simple message on Instagram. Hey, guys, just
really
introducing
welcoming.
Ourselves. Mm. Is there anything we can do for you? And I was like, wow, like the godfathers. They're in touch with us.
You talk about one of my favourite pizzas. Like, theirs is different altogether.
That's a different game.
It's delicious. Always great.
They've come in here and we've gone in there. And anything we can do for those guys, I know that there's been some changes there, but they're good guys. So our view is, you know, why would we not get on with other people doing similar stuff in the city? Why would you not?
Why can we not have a Birmingham pizza community where everybody works together and you try and raise the standard and try and get people better educated, I guess, as to what decent quality pizza looks like, and we can all benefit.
Only independence, though.
Yeah, only independence.
Don't start.
I always had a theory. I always had a theory that you could tell when a pub or a restaurant was going to just close.
They start doing pizza.
The pizza menu come out. And that interview with the lads from Pisa, Dan and Jack, that concreted it for me, that cemented it, because I thought, these lads live and breathe pizza.
Yeah.
They're obsessed with getting the dough correct. And if you're telling me you're just one day going to wake up and say, I think we need to buy a pizza oven and start doing pizza, and you think you're going to compete with that,
They probably buy the bases in. One of our son's school friends asked me the other day, bless him, he said, do you buy the pizzas from Tesco and heat them up and send them to people?
I can't believe how did they know?
That is probably what those what those pubs are doing.
Yeah, that's 100%.
Yeah, they're not putting the effort
in. That's 100%. How can they compete with people like yourselves? This is your passion.
Yeah, it's interesting. So that, I just mentioned that the Independent Birmingham Festival, that was our first street food event. Mm. We enjoyed it and we learned a lot, and you can tell you've really got to live it to be successful. You can't just rock up with an uni and say, right then boys, let's have a couple of pizzas. No, it doesn't work. We have a lot of customers come in here, and they've probably similar in a way that lockdown, they were bored, so they bought an uni or another pizza. And everyone comes in and we always get the same questions. Oh, what hydration do you use? What flour do you use? And we geek off and we talk about it. But then we thought, well, why don't we actually do some pizza classes and actually get people to come in and we'll show you how we make pizza. I mean, not give away trade secrets, albeit it's not that complicated. So we've done it a couple of times without much fanfare, and we're doing it again over the next year. And we've actually sold out the first couple of classes. So we just love telling people, showing people what we do, because we have to love it because it's such hard work.
Would you ever do like a kids pizza class?
Yeah, we'd love
we
to.
Have to. We kind of have done ad hoc. We've had kids come in, big groups, and then we find out that it's their birthday. We're like, well, why didn't you tell us? We could have done something. And we can change the menu so we can call the pizza after the kid's name if you want. It's not difficult.
We have a pizza on the menu named after our son with his favourite toppings on.
And we've done that. Actually, sitting on this table, we've had balloons and we've done some cakes.
I think we've had a couple of kids in the kitchen making their own pizza, but it's not quite the same as having a class four kids, because that's a lot of mess. So we still need to work out the logistics and the time of day.
Got to be careful in the kitchen. Bearing in mind, we're cooking at 440 degrees.
Yeah, don't want to lose any hands.
And that's the thing. You can do all the classes, but no one's got a pizza oven like that in their house.
Unless
you've got 12.5 grand lying around. I mean, it is on wheels. It is electric, and that's what catches people out.
So your oven's really interesting. You've got a good story about this.
It's the Isoforno. So it's like the Ferrari of ovens. Mm-hmm. We looked at gas. We looked at wood.
All kinds of regulations that you've got to get past. Because of the area restrictions, residential element. And also with a wood-fired oven, obviously you've got to be there building it every morning, building that fire, and you get cold spots. You know, the consistency isn't necessarily there. That's the brilliant thing about this oven. It's on a timer. It's there waiting for us when we get here. It takes away one element of risk for us. And it gets us past all of those issues. No cold spots. Really, really consistent and just great quality.
What temperatures does it get up to?
It can go up to probably 500 plus, couldn't it?
But plus. We've not taken it all the way up.
No, we don't need to. We cook at 440.
But what's wonderful is it's so well insulated. You switch it off at night. You come in the next morning, it's still at 200 degrees, so the whole room is
nice
warm.
And warm.
And you can cook bread. You can cook, if you wanted to, you could cook a Sunday roast in there. Mm. We're not going to. That's not
at 440 degrees. When it's a bit cooler.
Or pasta or whatever. But yeah, it's a wonderful piece of kit. But you have to invest in that piece of kit to get the product. In the way that we make dough here every day, that dough then gets put in the fridge. It's 48 hours before you actually see that dough on a plate.
Isn't it like the only electric pizza that's certified by...
I was just going to say that.
AVPN, which is like the pizza mafia, which I think is literally the mafia because it's all from Naples.
Basically, the Neapolitan Pizza Commission, basically. Yeah, the mafia. But it is the only electric oven in the world that we are officially allowed to still call our pizza Neapolitan, which many people put it... as a label on their menu, and perhaps they shouldn't.
Not technically right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
How'd you get a job with that association? Like, just go around testing the.
I think you have to be in the mafia. I don't think you can apply. You become you're invited.
So we've kind of gone back. We normally start at the beginning, but we've started with smoking ash. We'll probably come back to smoking ash. But Claire was obviously quite in the industry, but on the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Completely different. So I was working in finance. And like a lot of people, lockdown came, spending time at home. You know, I was doing 12 hours of Zoom calls a day. I mean, literally, it was just chaos, as well as trying to speak to customers, trying to have internal meetings. And he just sat there. It's like, I'm becoming a bank zombie. You know, I'm sitting there in my study. It's like, what am I doing? Where am I going with this? Wasn't really enjoying it. And it's, I can never work out when you work for a bank, whether you join a bank because of you've got a certain personality or whether the bank makes you into a certain personality. But either way, it wasn't working for me. So we've always wanted to do something together. We're both marketing graduates. We've always been interested in creating a brand. So the opportunity came because we sat there during lockdown in Solihull, as we discussed. It's like, let's get pizza. And then where'd you get pizza from in Solihull?
At the time,
There was no more.
So,
and it kind of got us thinking, well, where...
I remember driving to Moseley to pick something up because it was the closest I could get for Deliveroo.
Yeah, and then I think during the second lockdown, do you remember we all got released and we all went bonkers for a weekend and then they went, right, everyone back home. I forget where we were. We were in a pizzeria and we kind of went, we could do this. We could learn to do this, at least learn how the business would run.
We were just moaning that wasn't in our part of the world and then said, well, let's do something about that.
But we spent a long time planning and getting the funds and just understanding how we could cope without much of an income for a couple of years. I'm not entirely sure we've got that right. You know, we looked at various sites. We looked at a site in Solihull.
There were two sites. We spent a whole year trying to find a site in Solihull and they both fell through for completely different reasons.
And then we looked in Harbour.
We looked at
the site that the Bun and Barrel eventually took over. It was we liked it. We thought it was a really cracking site.
It is a great site. I think, the cost to refurbish it would have just been a little bit too much for us. It wasn't in a great state.
How much the guys behind Bun and Barrel must have spent on that joint must have been phenomenal. So we were introduced to Calthorpe. We had a look around here. There was a couple of spare units.
Yeah.
And this one particularly, because it's got three-phase electrics, you have to for the oven. Great. Let's look at this. So.
And it was just about big enough.
Yeah.
Had you already worked out what you wanted to see the oven? You already knew you were going to have
that oven.
We did the research.
Yeah.
So I
done
spent,
all this before.
I spent quite a amount of time working in different pizzerias around the UK, literally ringing people up saying, can I come and work for you? I'll work for free. Can I just come and see how the operation works? Not anything local. I'm not going to step on anyone's toes. So I did that. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, we've never, ever kidded ourselves how hard the work was going to be. Not once did we go, oh, this will be easy. We just turn it on and we'll crack on. We saw the amount of work that some of these places were doing.
Yeah, and actually, Paul had to run the kitchen for 3 weeks when our head chef was away. We were sort of in between team members, and I have newfound respect for the kitchen team. Just it is the most exhausting job in the world. It's they work so hard, and I don't think they get enough credit for it.
Was it always your passion to open? Like, did you always have it in your mind? It's like, one day I will own a restaurant.
I'll be honest, mate. I think I'm just obsessed with pizza. Literally have been. I mean, Claire won't let me open a trainer shop, so you know, what do I do? No, joking aside, we just thought there is an opportunity in this city to do something different. And you know, we have traveled around, we've lived lots of different places. You know, we're from the Midlands, but we've lived all over the UK, so we've kind of taken little bits of what we like, what we think works, and I think that's a good thing. I don't think there's enough people that get out and actually see that. And in other cities, go to Manchester's changing so quickly. People are doing stuff like, wow, I never thought about doing it that way. You go to Bristol, you go to Leeds. We're not even mentioning London. London's like a different world.
Yeah.
Different.
Oh,
world.
London's like, we don't even bother bringing my list of places to try in London. I think I had a place every day. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot. I think I've got about 100 places on the list. If I moved to London now, I couldn't go to all the places I wanted to go to.
It's impossible, isn't it? Yeah. And I don't know how people survive when there's that much competition.
No.
It must be exhausting every single day.
Isn't it? There's just that many people in London.
And the culture of these cities is so different. We're such a small island. You go to Bristol, it's so fiercely left-wing independent. I mean, you just think, are we on the same planet? And people literally go out of their way to support independence. You could not open some of the chains in Bristol. People wouldn't go. I mean, they opened a Tesco, didn't they, in Bristol?
The riots.
There were riots.
Yeah, yeah. The street art is nearly all political. You know, it's really full on, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's great because it's got a personality and a culture that's almost unique.
Yeah, you know, we're fans of Bristol. Yeah, it's a nice place.
I do miss living there a lot.
So there's loads of good players. I love Manchester.
Yeah.
Like, I know there's it's a fun rivalry thing between us and Manchester. I don't understand why it exists, but because Birmingham's way better. But nevertheless... I love Manchester. I think Manchester's cracking night out.
Manchester's changing so quickly. And you go up there now, it looks like Manhattan. The buildings, I mean, a lot of it is apartments that sit there empty, and whether that's affected the culture of the city. Because one thing you can say about Manchester, there's a swagger about it. I don't think you see anywhere else. Possibly Liverpool. You know, and, you know, the pizza scene up there is just unbelievably good. It's so competitive and so high quality. And it's busy every night. You know, here in Greenfield Crescent, we get absolutely smashed Friday, Saturdays, Sundays, possibly Wednesday or Thursday. But the rest of the week, nothing.
I used to spend a lot of time in Glasgow in my previous company. I worked for a whiskey company. And so I'd be up there sort of midweek overnight, and we'd be out straight from the office for dinner. And sometimes on a Tuesday or Wednesday, you can't get in places at 6 o'clock. And it's just amazing. That city is just alive. There's so much going on.
I mean, unless we're missing something, perhaps everyone's in Sturgeley. I mean, is Sturgeley busy on a Monday night?
I think we touched on it earlier. Birmingham's that spread out. It's that much bigger than... Because by Manchester standard, Birmingham, the
centre
itself is huge by comparison to any other city other than London. And it's everything's everywhere. You could go to Sturgeley on a Monday and you might be really busy. And then Tuesday, King's Eve's heaving. Yeah. But then Sturgeley would be really quiet that night. You can't predict... And like everyone we speak to, no one can predict what night's going to be busy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's hard to plan your rotas.
What area people will be busy,
And you speak to other operators in hospitality and everybody says the same thing. So we said we have a lot of people that walk in here. And when we first started, I had no idea who half these people were. You know, somebody had to tell me that was Stu Dealey. Who's he? You know, because I'm not from hospitality. And it's like, oh, okay, well, he's got tattoos on his arm. He must be a chef.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at least I know who Luke Tipping is because he's round the corner. But, you know, we have a lot of people come in and I try and learn from them because these guys are good at what they do and everybody says the same thing. You have no idea when you open the doors what's going to happen.
Yeah.
No.
You can't get anyone better than Luke Tipping to tell you how to run a restaurant.
Well,
he's told everyone how to run a restaurant.
So we've learned. We enjoy having those guys in. It means a lot that they come in and enjoy our food. Who else is regular in here? Angelina. Everyone loves Angelina. She bakes our desserts. Yeah, she's for somebody of that age, she's got such an amount of knowledge and she knows everything, like anything that's happening in the city. Like, there's definitely a community that we feel a bit more part of now, but you know, perhaps here in Edgbaston, we are a little bit more distanced from what's going on in the epicentre of Sturge Vegas and Moseley and King's Heath.
But I think the great thing is that there are so many more independents now. So, you know, we left Birmingham in 2010 and then moved back after sort of 7-8 years, wasn't it? And we were just so bored when we left. It was just big national chains and it didn't feel like there was an independent community at all. I mean, I'm conscious we're seeing it through a different lens now being business owners, but there wasn't a lot of excitement in the city back then. And moving back, it was really refreshing to see what has actually happened to the place in all of the different areas that you've just mentioned, city centre and the neighbourhood areas as well. There is so much cool business going on now.
Well, I think if we ever went for dinner, if you went back sort of 10 years ago, we only went for curry. It was always, we'll go for a drink and we'll go for a curry.
And that was all Birmingham
really had, massively.
I think about some of the brands, places we used to go. So we were students here. So do you remember the Arcadian on a Sunday afternoon in the early 2000s? Do you remember,
you may have read about this in the history books.
Do you remember Serco?
Serco.
So I didn't realise it was Adam from The Plough who ran Serco.
Oh, I did not know that.
And Adam's been a supporter of us here, and we enjoy, you know, talking to him and listening to his advice. And I was like, I didn't realise you ran Serco. I'm like, I used to go there when I was a kid for the DMC Championships. Like,
52 what? North as well. What? That was him as well. Like,
almost like fanboy. Like, yeah, I mean, what other places do we enjoy going to? We enjoy going to the Hare and Hounds. Their programming is just unbelievable. And we used to enjoy going down. Do you remember the Medicine Bar?
Yeah.
Where Buchan would be on every week. And things like that. So there was, but it all just seemed to kind of just go.
The music scene was, for us being old ravers, Birmingham was a great place to go out, both drum and bass and anything kind of dance music related.
So used to be in the Dome then.
The Dome. Do you remember Atomic Jam at the Q Club?
Yeah, you know, we used to go to Flashback.
The Dome. Kids wouldn't even know what the Dome was.
A Flashback at the Q Club was brilliant. I mean, it was rough, but it was brilliant.
What was the one that had the glass floor? I can't remember the name of it now.
There was a glass floor.
There was a
don't remember that.
Rave place, a nightclub, and it had the top level had a glass floor and you could dance on, you could see down.
Because really? I mean,
what was that called now?
But we used to go to the Sanctuary where it had all the mezzanine levels, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I remember going to the old day.
I remember going to, we were talking the day, how many people in this city remember going to the opening night of Code in God's Kitchen?
It was like, 2000, like the whole
city.
Was
like, yeah. Well, it felt like the whole city was in that queue, I have to admit. Yeah. It's, there's another one for you, Roses in Solihull.
Oh, yeah. Every Thursday. At school, I was there every Thursday. That's when you could drink when you were like 15, 16.
What else was there? It was Baker's at the top of Broad Street.
Mm-hmm. So Baker's.
I've got an older brother who was mad rave, but we were like alternative kids, goth kids. So we were going like XL's, Eddie's, Scruffy's, Flapper.
Oh, wow.
But I'd still do the Thursday at Rose's.
Yeah, we still done Rose's.
It was so cheap. It was
insane. You live near Solly Hall, you were doing Rose's on a Thursday. You
remember?
We used to go on a Friday, didn't we?
This is what we were just talking about. Remember how busy Solly Hall used to be on a night out?
We used to come over to Solihull from other parts of the Midlands and it was just packed.
I remember queuing at Rose to get into Rosie's. I remember walking out of the Masons and the queue for Rosie's was outside the Masons. Yeah. So I just walked straight out and then stood in the queue. Mm-hmm.
We've moved around so much. You know, we have the same stories about Leeds or Sheffield or Bristol or Brighton or Cheltenham. And the world has changed so much. You know, we walked past a pub in Harbourne last night and it was packed and it was brilliant to see. And then we thought, well, that's what it used to be every single night. And we constantly look at, you know, the prices that we charge. And, you know, we're not a charity. We have to make money. But the very fact that we are now having to charge circa £6 for a pint, and that's the cheap end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
If someone had told you you'd have to spend £6 a pint a couple of years ago, you'd have looked at them like, what are you on about?
And that isn't gross profiteering. That's literally, that's just covering everything. Costs. Yeah.
I used to run a local boozer and I remember putting the pint of Carling up to £2.
Oh,
and I remember
Lordy.
The absolute moan and riot.
I mean, I think you can still find, I'm told by my friend in Huddersfield, the £1.90 pint still exists. I've got a friend, going back to Manchester, he's moved his brewery out from Manchester to Stockport. Tells me it's the new Berlin. You can find a pint for £2.50. I'm not entirely sure what's very Berlin about Stockport, but the cost of doing this business are just, I don't think people realize. And you hear the same moan all the time. And, you know, neither do people need to, you know, worry about our problems. But there comes a point where you're like, how much can you charge for a pizza?
Regardless of what you need to charge, people don't necessarily have that much money to part with. No. And we're really conscious of that.
I think you're seeing it with chip shops at the minute, you know, good old Chippies.
Jesus.
All of the good ones, if you look on the property pages, a lot of the good ones are for sale now because there's only a ceiling to what people will pay for fish and chips and the cost of oil, cost of potatoes.
Talking like two cod and chips, 20 quid.
Yeah. Easy.
Like that used to be about five.
A pub cost. Like, yeah. That was dining at the pub.
It feels like there's some profiteering. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we're constantly looking at our prices. And there's, like I said, I think you're going to be in a world soon in the next 12 months where a £20 pizza, you know, and I know, again, the big chains, the mega sheds, they've just got a scale. They can do a £6.50 pizza. I mean, they're losing money on it every single time, but does the average punter care about that?
Yeah.
So we just got to make sure that, you know, we appeal to a market segment that understands quality and people
very
are prepared
well
to pay.
Very well placed here for that, though.
Oh, yeah, and that was part of the reason that we went with Edgbaston, knowing that we would be slightly protected from any economic problems. It doesn't remove them completely. But yes, there is a certain level of living standard, I guess, that people have here.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Like, why not?
We have a phenomenal takeout business. We work with Deliveroo, and you wouldn't believe the amount that we sell on a Thursday.
How has that been working with Deliveroo?
Do you want me the honest answer?
Yeah, honestly.
Our account manager is amazing, and I will not fault him at all. Some of the drivers are not perhaps as committed, shall we say.
So the love that goes into the pizza, so you know, we're just watching Giovanni get the kitchen ready. I mean, this guy's a wizard. He's a genius. And the work that goes into it and the sourcing of the ingredients, you know, these things aren't cheap. You know, people go, oh, pizza's a cheap food to make. No, it ain't, mate. And you hand it to the Deliveroo driver. And to be fair, it could be any driver. I think it's probably wrong just to pick on one brand.
It just happens that we're working with that one. Yes.
They take it and they tip it upside down. Yeah. And you're kind of sitting there.
This concertina thing. And
what have you done? What have you done? And we have, again, let's not bash people. But
yeah, I mean, I wasn't meaning so much like on the delivery drivers. I mean, like I've heard horror stories of them taking like a fair whack. Isn't their commission
they do,
quite
yeah,
a lot?
It is. And I do get that there's, you know, they're paying for the drivers that if we had to pay for them ourselves, it'd cost us even more.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a fair chunk. You don't obviously make the same profit level as you do selling a pizza in-house by any means.
Well, when you're a new business, you have to be on certain channels for people to know you're there. And if you ask the average 18-year-old what they'd like to do tonight, they'll use the expression, we'll get a Deliveroo. Not, we'll get a pizza or we'll get a kebab. Yeah. We'll get a Deliveroo. Mm. You're thinking,
and then they scroll through Deliveroo to find something that catches their eye. It's also trial. It's almost a marketing tool to try and get people to experience our brand, and then hopefully they come into us. But
you think of the volumes that we've done this year, and we were amazed that we've made it this much. We've made 25,000 pizzas.
Wow.
We've got an 1,100 square feet restaurant. We have a kitchen that you guys are looking at here. That is it. There's no secret dark kitchen. Everything is there.
People say to me sometimes, oh, you should have this on the menu. I say, yes, that's a very good idea. Where would you like me to put it?
So we're working out how long is 25,000 pizzas?
Oh, I think we worked out it was like a return journey up the Aston Expressway and back.
And
a bit more,
up to Erdington.
Yeah.
Round the island.
Round the island and back
into the,
down again.
Pop into the Armada if it's still open. Back down.
Good Lord.
Yeah, that's the
not
one.
Not if you value your life.
And back up again. And, you know, we've something like 5,000 cocktails, which, you know, is probably the same that tattoos sell in half an hour.
Yeah, but I'm quite proud of that still for a little neighbourhood restaurant.
I mean, I could drink 5,000 of your cocktails, I think. I'd give it a good go.
I think we have another idea for another podcast. It could be live where we drink those 5,000 cocktails.
Oh, yeah. I'm well up for that.
Yeah, we can do that now.
Make our own Brummy Marys live on air.
Seeing as the market's not on today, perhaps we could just, you know, we could do it. In 12 months, we've done those volumes. We've made that many drinks.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an almost, I want to say it's a flawless rating, you know, we've got 4.9 on Google.
No, you know, sometimes things do happen. You can't be perfect all the time. That's human nature. But we're really, really proud of the ratings that we've got, the reviews we've had.
Proud of the team we've put together. Obviously, the team's changed. You know, some people have come and gone. But most customers like what we do. You get the odd curveball where somebody will come in and everything seems to be okay. And then half an hour later, you look, Google sort of goes, you know, criticism. Like, why didn't you tell us when you come in? We asked you, is everything okay? Yes.
And then it is
a British way.
And
you're sitting there like, but we could have solved that problem for you if you just told us. Deliveroo the other night, sometimes things go missing in the Deliveroo man's bag. That's okay. Dips. You know, when you come here, dips are a thing. You dip your crust in, bang, there you go.
And do your aioli.
And a customer wrote, the dips were missing. You have ruined our night.
Fucking hell.
You have ruined our night. But thank you for that kind review. And then to double down on it, they left another review 3 days later telling us that we were very, very average. I mean, you want to, does that person need a hug?
Yeah.
You seem to kind of deal with them quite well. Have you always, the whole year you've been doing this, have you been able to deal with it quite well from the beginning? Or?
I get, Claire's probably a little bit more level-headed about everything in life than I am. I get quite impassioned about most things, but we've actually rang customers up constructively in a professional way to say, I'm really sorry to hear this. You know, can you tell us where we went wrong? Because we'd love to know how to get things right in the future. And actually, you turn it around because the customer's like, wow, you really care. Like, we do. That's why I'm calling you. And you don't ask people to change their review. You can't do that and you wouldn't do that. But actually, people say, you know, fair play, the fact that you've taken that time to do it, I'm going to change that review. And they become advocates. They come in here all the time because we've taken that time to try and work out where we need to be better.
But have you always, is that always been your kind of mentality? Or have you
in my corporate career, I've looked after some huge businesses. I was an account manager of GlaxoSmithKline at 25. I'm looking after a multi-billion pound business.
But this is different. This is your passion.
But it's fundamentally the same. You have to look after people. You have to make sure if they need something, you get it. And if you're not doing very well, you need to understand what you need to do better.
And if you overpromise and underdeliver, they have every right to be annoyed with that. I accept that.
We don't always get things right, but we try to get the basics right.
This is what I keep telling people, and we'll say it again on the podcast. If you have a problem at the restaurant, tell them while you're there. Some restaurants may get funny with you and people may get funny, but nearly everyone we speak to, they want to know.
Yes.
They want to know if they're not doing something right, because they might not know it's wrong.
And then we can refund, discount, offer you something in the future. You know, if it's our fault, we've got no wish for people to go away and feel like they've had a rubbish time.
But even if it's not, you can at least explain why something might be the way it was. Yep. You know what
and
I mean?
And sometimes it's just about, well, this is my experience of pizza and therefore I expect this. Well, actually, that's not the style that we make here. So let us talk to you about what our style is.
We had another one when we first opened. A customer said, the pizza's not cooked. Okay, what do you mean by that, sir? It's not cooked, it's soft. Okay, let me have a look. That's definitely a Neapolitan style pizza, sir. Well, I want it crispy.
We do get asked for extra crispy sometimes.
But they're not crispy pizza, sir. That's New York style.
We politely decline.
But I don't want it. Well, what do you want to do with it? I'll put it back in the oven for you. No problem at all. And absolutely charred it. There you go. And he ate it. It's like, or can you put the pizza back in? It's just, or people say, do you do a meat feast? Is it on the menu? No. People don't read the menu. You try to tell them that the dough is so soft, if you overload it, it's impossible to cook. You'll just make a mess of it.
Yeah.
So there's a constant kind of educational thing about this is how we make the pizza. This is why we make it in a certain way. And this is what we do with it. You know, we're not a Domino's. We're not a Pizza Hut.
No.
But I think all that takes time. I think this is still a relatively new style in the history of the world for British people to get used to, maybe Birmingham people. And I think we do have a bit of a responsibility there to do some education. Hopefully that's something with our pizza and cocktail classes that we can help people to understand what we do and how things are made. And
so these are popular. You said the few have sold out. How much and what's the setup of it? What do people get?
It's a two-hour class. We're going to split the group, try and have a maximum of 10 people. I guess we could flex that for a private group, but ideally, you don't really want more than 5 people on each station at the time. So we'll start off with one group being on the bar, and they'll learn about cocktails, a bit about spirits production, different cocktail styles, history of cocktails. And then everybody chooses one cocktail from our current menu and make that and drink that themselves. And then they'll move over to the kitchen, learn about dough, learn about our oven, and then get to stretch at top and cook their own pizza and then eat that. And that's £50 for a two-hour class at the moment.
So good job. It is. And it feels to us that people now want an experience when they go, when they spend money. Like we went out last night into Harbour and spent £70 on 2 courses and a bottle of wine. That's so expensive. Like £50, 2 hours of education, if you want to call it that, entertainment. You get to take a pizza home. You get to hang out with your mates.
The entree does feel more and more about experiences rather than just food and drink. And we're really conscious that we have to keep trying to provide something different to be part of.
What have you had the most valuable lesson in this year?
Have we? I can write a book. I can write a book if you want about things that we've learned. I think we were talking in some other interviews about the fact that we work together. Everyone says, what's it like working with your husband or wife? It must be horrible. It's actually the opposite. it's actually really good because we have an element that
you can trust each
so
other.
Much trust.
Yeah.
So
and you know each other so well, so you know each other's stress points and you know each other's strengths, so you can work together. But I think it's probably an obvious thing to say, but don't assume anything is the biggest thing that I've learned. So, you just go, yeah, these people are behaving this way. Oh,
you
okay,
wake up every morning
don't.
And you think to yourself, what is going to happen today before 12 o'clock? And something will come out of nowhere. And you're like, wow, I didn't see that one coming. Whether that's humans or whether it's a product, there's so many moving parts. I don't think people realize in hospitality how many decisions you have to make in a couple of hours and how many things you have to change on the fly. You have to deal with humans that come through the door. You have to deal with humans that you employ. And everyone's got, you know, something happening in their lives. So is that any different from any other industry? I don't know.
Maybe. So if you could give one piece of advice to anyone who's looking to open their own restaurant, what would it be?
Do your research. Don't make sure you've got some good people. You know, we like to think we treat people at least properly. We pay them properly. Again, we don't always get things right, but good people are hard to find.
I love how you've done your research by going off and working in other pizzerias as well. That's
you got to. Yeah. I mean, what kind of manager, what kind of owner would you be if you didn't actually understand how the kitchen worked?
Yeah,
Paul did a lot of really valuable pizza training, learning how to, you know, be a chef himself. Mm. So it's not the same as, you know, people that have got 20 years experience, but it's a heck of a lot better than having none at all. And it's really helped us in those days, you know, when you've got sickness or whatever, or you need holiday cover. And we've been able to just step up and keep the business running. And I don't think that many customers actually notice. So I take that as a win.
I think so where we've got to in 12 months, if you said to us, you know, a year and a half ago, this is where you'll be, will you take it? Yes. It is hard work. I think our challenge over the next 12 months is to refine what we do, operationally become a bit slicker, make sure there's, you know, more consistency. And, you know, the phrase we use, everyone uses, I think, is working more on the business, not in the business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not constantly having to fill shifts and everything else. So, yeah, we've got plenty of work to do, but I think putting a good team around us, making sure we've got the right support, will be fine.
No, you should be mega proud. You've built something
really cool.
Well, it's nice when people say, because we do forget, we are pretty self-critical.
It's easy just to get swept up in the day-to-day challenges. But, yeah, we are very proud. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
So we kind of finished just with Carl's fun questions. They're just quick.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Go on.
Hit me.
I'll start a new one today. What's your favourite pizza on the menu?
We have a special at the moment. Pigs in port. It's got a port glaze, reduced LBV.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Porchetta, barbecue and port base. Fennel seeds, option of either mozzarella or gorgonzola or a little bit of a mixture of both, spring onions, and then the port and marmalade glaze.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's going down very well at the moment.
That's the thing. You know what we did the other week? We did a hamburger pizza. Were you here for that?
Which one did you have? I was here then. I had the mortadella one.
Okay.
I'd have that every time now.
It is.
I think that I generally, like, we haven't done the post yet. We usually do a top five dishes of the year or things we've eaten, and I would 100% put that on the top five things I've eaten this year.
There's a balance between being creative and being wacky, and sometimes if you get it too far one way or the other, it just doesn't work.
So we try and play around on the specials menu as much as we can, but I think the main menu does need to stay relatively true to those classics and those Italian type flavors, but we can just gradually evolve things as we go forward.
What's your favorite cocktail?
Chili and yuzu margarita
100%.
All the way.
It's
our
house favourite.
Yeah. It's very, very good. I think the only thing I've come here and not had it, to be honest.
It sells so much.
Yeah. Just sounds great, though. Like, everyone loves a margarita anyway. Like, if you don't like a margarita, there's something not right. You don't like drinking if you don't like a margarita.
When we were part of Birmingham Cocktail Weekend, I think a lot of people came in here, were very surprised about how strong the drinks offering was and is.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a perfect world, we'd have bigger space and we'd do more with the drinks and the bar.
What's your favourite TV show?
I don't have time to watch TV, mate. I don't have time to watch. We watched like everybody else in hospitality. We watched The Bear and watched it all the way through and sat there and went, oh my God, that's exactly what happened. I enjoyed that. Our little boy, who's just about to turn 7, he's started to get into Star Wars.
Yes.
So we watched the Obi-Wan Kenobi. I mean,
that was fantastic.
I think he's the worst actor of his generation by a mile, but we enjoyed it. We really enjoyed it. I used to watch so much sport. I don't watch anything. We're just never, ever at home.
No. What was your sport that you watched?
I was a big basketball fan. Basketball, rugby, cricket. Before, when we lived in Bristol, we lived in a cricket stadium.
Oh, right.
Gloucestershire County Ground. So we used to have cricket in our garden every day. Actually, you know what TV show I do enjoy watching, boys? Bluey.
Yeah. You know what?
Everyone's blew it.
The three specials that are coming up, I think it's in January. There's 3 half-hour episodes coming out, and I cannot wait.
You know, I spent 3 years at university doing an English literature degree, reading Shakespeare pretty much. That is on the same level.
Yeah. I'm bored. I think it's one of the greatest programs made.
It's so clever.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite cookbook?
Actually, yes. Madda Jaffrey's Curry Bible is my favourite cookbook.
I haven't cooked for
me yet. It's carried me for 20 years, probably.
There was Rose's Thai as well that somebody bought for us.
Yeah, but that Madda Jaffrey's is the one that I go back to time and time again. It's absolutely brilliant. History of the spice trade around the world and how different curries have grown with different ingredients and where they've come from. It's just amazing.
Yeah. If you're going out in Birmingham and you're not coming here, where are you going?
We went to 670 grams last Sunday. The Sunday
for the lunch. Sunday
yeah,
lunch.
We did. Yeah. We took our little boy.
Yeah, it was really so enjoyed it.
It was really well done.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite places. Because it was not just to see it in the wild. I love the place.
It was. It made. They were busy, so we managed to get a drink in at Passing Fancies as well, which we hadn't been to in about 9 months. So it was nice just to kind of go in and see some of these places.
They even made a little non-alcoholic cocktail for our little boy, and he said, "I am coming here again every time."
It was very good. So when we do get out of this place, we just pop over to the Highfield. Their Sunday lunch is really good. Apart from that, but we never get to come see them. We went to Simpsons for the first time for their collaboration with Meat Shack.
That was brilliant.
Oh, I really wanted to go to that.
It was really well done. I mean, it was the only thing I think we could afford that night. We couldn't go for a proper a la carte session. No. That was really well done. We were looked after very well. Mm-hmm. So.
Last question. Other than Birmingham, where's your favourite food destination in the world?
Bristol, Sydney, trying to think where else has really impressed us.
I used to spend a lot of time in northern Italy in the Prosecco region, work related, and that the food there was absolutely to die for. Just the local produce there is incredible. The seasonality, just brilliant. I miss that a lot.
We spent a lot of time in Spain, Barcelona.
Yeah,
it's particularly strong. You know, we spent a lot of time in our youth in Ibiza. People don't realise how strong the food scene is there, although it's so phenomenally expensive now. Unless you've got your own yacht, you can't go.
Yeah, we could. It's bizarre. We could afford it more in our 20s now than we can now.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
But Barcelona particularly, even its pizza scene, is incredible now.
Yeah, there's some really cool places in Barcelona. We talk about big city.
Do you know Can Pizza? They're a great local chain around the Barcelona area. They're really worth visiting. Really cool branding, great merchandise, really cool venues. They've just won the best pizza in Spain, didn't they? They're brilliant. So yeah, they've been great inspiration for us as well.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.